Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
Thank you, band, for that incredible, incredible ushering into our worship this morning. Oh, God, that song gets me emotional every single time. So excuse me while I recover for just a minute. For those of you who don't know me, my name is April Colquitt. I'm on staff here at Wellspring. I'm our children's pastor, and I also serve in our communications team. And so today, as we wrap up our series, God is Love, I'm excited to be able to share a little bit of my experience with you. Some of you know my husband, Eric. He is here with us on the front row this morning. He's our student pastor and my partner in ministry. We do family ministry together, which is pretty cool. And so as partners in ministry, he brings me to student camp every summer. It's like a benefit of being married to the student pastor. And student camp, if you don't know, it's a pretty big deal here at Wellspring. We talk about it all summer long, and we don't get over it till at least January. And then it's time to do it all over again. And so it's a really cool week. It's just this really life-changing week for our students. But it's also just a ton of fun. And Eric and his team do this incredible job of putting together some really fun stuff for our students. One of those things involves a lot of competitive games. And when I say competitive, it gets really competitive. And I want to actually tell you a little story. But first, I want to introduce you to one of our tribes. This is the Camo Tribe. They are ninth grade boys. I mean, are they bad to the bone or what? Like, they just look like they're going to be competitive, and they are. These group of boys, this is not even all of them, I don't think. They're a pretty big tribe, and they've been together for a long time. A lot of them have been growing up together since they were really little, and they are competitive, athletic boys. And so when they come to camp, they come to play hard. And there was this one day this summer that Eric's team had set up this really incredible, like, survivor-level obstacle course. I'm not kidding. Like, there were games that literally could be on Survivor. And it was really awesome. And at each level of the obstacle course, at each leg of the race, they had to compete in these different challenges. And they couldn't move on to the next challenge until they got that one. And this group of boys right here, as competitive as they are and as athletic as they are, there was this one challenge in this obstacle course that they just really, really struggled with. I want to show you a picture of it, and I'll try to describe to you what they're doing. So there was this round, big wood, about this big, in the middle, and they had to, each four of them had to hold ropes and balance that board to stack blocks in the middle that spelled the word faith. So they would take turns going around the circle, around their lines, and they would have to work their way to the middle of that board, holding it steady, not letting it lose its balance, and one of them would put a block on, then they would move back in place, and the next one would go, all while holding this steady. Now, it was painful to watch, okay, because it was really hard, and for them in particular, for whatever reason, because they were trying so hard, they kept dropping their faith blocks. I mean, they must have dropped those blocks 15 times, which meant they had to keep starting over and starting over and starting over, and every time they started over, you could just see the defeat on their faces. They were getting a little bit more discouraged and a little closer to giving up, but their other tribes were around them. They're cheering them on. The other tribes who were competing in that race had moved on. They were on the final leg of the race, and they were stuck in this game, and they could not get it. Finally, they get it. But it was so hard to watch. I felt what they were experiencing. This is my son right here, Sam. And so it was like, it was just so hard to watch. Literally, like, come on. And every time they would drop it, you'd go, oh, no. I mean, everybody was just on edge watching this game. But I want to tell you, I have felt that in real life, right? That feeling of just having to start over and over and over, dropping the blocks, going all the way back to square one and having to start over, that feeling of defeat and discouragement. I have felt it, and you probably have too. And there was a time in my life when my view of God assumed that he must be constantly disappointed with me because I kept dropping my blocks in faith. I kept stumbling and I could not keep my balance no matter how hard I tried. That was what I thought about God, that he was disappointed with me. And the reason that I wanted to paint that picture for you this morning and share that story with you is because for the last few weeks, we've been talking about our view of God and what we think about him. See, we all have an image in our mind, a picture of what we believe God is like, what his character is like, and it affects everything about our life. It affects how we respond to situations. It affects how we treat other people, how we view ourselves. And all of those images that we have in our mind are formed off of past experiences, our family, our background, how we were raised, things that we've been through have shaped our belief and our image of God. And so for the last few weeks, we've been pointing to this quote from a man named A.W. Tozer. It says, "What comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us." Tozer is saying the image that we have of who God is and what he is like impacts every area of our life. And we've been challenging everyone to consider what they believe about God because it does impact everything about us. It impacts the way that we live. It impacts the way that we treat people. It impacts the way that we view ourselves. And so we have been recalibrating our views and our thoughts about God in this series through the lens of Jesus. Because if our image of God is anything other than Jesus, then it's inaccurate. And if this statement is true, then we want to be absolutely sure that our beliefs about God are accurate, which means the only image we should have in our mind of God is Jesus. So if you've missed any of the last few weeks, I want to encourage you to go to the Wellspring app and catch up on any of those that you might have missed, or you can go to YouTube or our website. If you only have time to go back and listen to one message, I want to recommend that you go to week two. Because in week two, it was very life-changing. Trey talked about how some of us have an image of God in our mind that he is mad at us, that he judges us, and that he condemns us. And what he helped us to understand is that God is not mad at us. He does not condemn us. He does not judge us. He loves us. He wants a relationship with us, and he wants to give us the best life possible. And as I listened to him give that message a few weeks ago, I couldn't help but think about my own journey of recalibrating my view of God and how my image of God has changed over the course of my life. And so as we wrap up this series today, I just wanted to share a little bit with you about my personal experience and what I've learned and how my image of God has changed. I grew up in a Christian home and I became a Christian at a very young age, but as a teenager, I did not walk with Jesus. He was there, but I was not engaging with him ever. And so I made some pretty reckless decisions. I did some pretty dumb things, and it made for some really long years for my parents and for some other adults who really cared about me. And every time that I would get in trouble, because I got in trouble a lot, every time I would get in trouble, I remember many times hearing my parents say that they were disappointed with me. They loved me. There was no question about that. I knew that they loved me, but they were disappointed with my decisions. They were disappointed with my choices. So every time I got into trouble, I had to earn my way back to freedom. Now, I'm a parent. I have teenage children. And I know that consequences and earning trust is just part of good parenting. It's necessary in parenting. But as a young person, when I would get into trouble and I would have to earn my way back to freedom, what I felt was I was a disappointment, I felt shame, and I felt awkwardness with my family. And that was unsettling to me. It was stressful. And so after a while, I finally decided I don't want to live like that anymore. I certainly don't want to live my adult life skating in and out of trouble and dodging dangerous situations. And so I decided to turn back to Jesus because I knew that he was there. I knew that he loved me, and I knew that he would forgive me for all of those things that I had been doing. So I crawled my way back to God. And sure enough, he's there with open arms. But I could not help but feeling like I had been a disappointment. I understood that my past sins were forgiven, But I felt like God was disappointed with me. I knew that he loved me, but maybe because I knew he loved me, I equated his love with disappointment. And so I didn't want to be a disappointment anymore. I decided I was going to be good. I was going to get everything just right, stack my faith blocks just right, and not let them fall. And of course, that wasn't possible, right? Because walking a perfect path is not possible. And so what I found is that even when I was trying really, really hard, I would mess up. Something wouldn't go right. I would do something I regretted. I'd get mad and words would fly. Or I wouldn't pray. I'd forget to talk to God for a long time. I didn't pick up my Bible for weeks. And every time I did that, I felt like I had to start all over again. I would feel the condemnation and the guilt and the shame. And it became this vicious cycle of mistake and regret and starting all over. Mistake and regret and starting all over. It was like just being stuck on this spiritual hamster wheel, running as hard as I could, effectively going nowhere. And I would go to church a lot, but I would sit in church and feel like I was embarrassed to be there. Like I was a disappointment. Who was I to be in church singing songs and worshiping God? I don't know if any of you have ever come into this room and felt like you were a disappointment. Maybe you had a fight with your spouse on the way here and you thought, I cannot go in there and sing songs and lift my hands to worship because that would be like I'm a hypocrite. Or maybe you think, I cannot pray out loud in a group because I'm not Christian enough yet. Or you thought, I can't ask God for things because I did everything this week that I said I wasn't going to do anymore, and I don't deserve to have my prayers heard. I have been there. I know what that's like because there was a time in my life when my view of God assumed that I was a frequent disappointment to him, and it held me hostage. Right? It held me hostage because I was so afraid of messing up, so afraid of not getting everything perfect that I wasn't doing anything at all, just stagnant. And if you're anything like me and that resonates with you at all, you probably have a nagging question in the back of your mind where you're always asking yourself, have I done enough to make God happy with me? Have I done enough to make God happy with me this week or today? Can I tell you what I discovered? There's good news and there's bad news. I'll give you the bad news first. You might want to brace yourself. You're not good enough for God. I am not good enough for God. None of us are good enough for God. That's the bad news. The good news is he never asked us to be good enough. He never expected perfection from us. The perfect one has already come. His name is Jesus. And he purchased our freedom. He's perfect, so we don't have to be. But see, we live in an economy where nothing is free, right? Nothing is free. Think about it. If you want to apply for a job, you have to have the right qualifications first. If you want to apply for a loan, you have to pre-qualify for the loan. If you want to take certain classes in college, you got to take 101 before you can take 102. Doesn't matter if you already know everything in 101, you still got to take it. We live in an economy of prerequisites and pre-qualifications. Costco and Sam's, they've got some great deals you can shop, but you've got to pay them a fee before you can shop those deals. I mean, really? And we sign up for it. We're like, let's go. Here's my annual fee. I'm about to spend $300 on snacks. You know, it's like, we don't even blink about it. This summer, Eric and I went, we had to buy a mattress for one of our kids. And we were near the end of the sale, and the salesperson that was working with us said, you guys qualify for two $50 vouchers for pillows today. And I was like, no, we're good. And he was like, you don't need any pillows? Our pillows start at $50. And I was like, we don't need them. We're fine. And Eric looked at me. He goes, we don't need pillows. And I said, no, we're not spending any more money. He said, he's trying to tell you the pillows are free. And I was like, oh, okay, well, then we'll take two pillows, right? But I wasn't getting it. Actually, we spent several hundred dollars to get those two $50 pillows for free. So nothing is free. Nothing is free. So when it comes to God's economy, then you know what we do? We look for the fine print. We're looking for the back door to the freedom. Like, there must be something that we're missing. We think we've got to fix something first. We've got to stop some of these habits, or we've got to get better at doing these things over here, and then we can live in freedom. That's what we think. A lot of us have this idea that we've got to earn our spiritual tokens. We've got to stack our blocks just right and keep them balanced for at least 30 seconds, and then we can move on to the next challenge. Then we can move on to the next level with God where the real blessings are. We just cannot understand the economy of God where things are free for free. And I get it. It's hard for me. But the truth is that the gospel message is so simple. The gospel message is so simple. If we believe that Jesus was the perfect Son of God and that he died on the cross to pay the punishment for our sin, then we are free. Our sin is paid for. All past sins and all future sins. And that's where I think we get stuck sometimes. Like me, so we can understand that our past sins were paid for. But once we begin a relationship with Jesus, we somehow think, now that's on us. Everything we do to mess up once we are in a relationship with Jesus must be on us. We've got to earn credits with God if we're in relationship with him, because we know better and we're supposed to be doing things right then. That's how we think. But we complicate the cross. God never expected perfection. He never expected us to be good enough for him. He sent his perfect son, Jesus, for that reason, which for us, that's what this means. Here's what this means. We don't have to be perfect to live free. Jesus paid the price for our sin. He purchased our freedom. So we don't have to be perfect to live free. God's love is unconditional. It comes without condition, without prerequisites. But when our view of God has been shaped by the absolute opposite of things that are free, it's hard for us to understand, and it is hard for us to equate freedom to our life without having to earn it first. But you know, Christians have been struggling with this since the crucifixion and the resurrection happened. The earliest Christians, people who saw the crucifixion happen, people who were there when Jesus came back to life, struggled with this too. So we're not alone. It's not that we're just so far removed from it that it's too hard for us to get it. They had the same problem in the early church. If you read the New Testament, there's lots of talk about the law. The law referred to the old rules and traditions that God gave to Moses and that Moses handed down to everybody else. Before Jesus came, those rules were the only way that a person could be made right with God. They had to follow and obey all of these rules. There were all kinds of things about what they could eat and what they could wear and when they could eat and when they couldn't eat, like just everything. And following those rules to the perfect T was not possible. And so they struggled. And then God sent Jesus. He gave Jesus as the perfect sacrifice to pay the punishment for sin. And so once Jesus did that, he became the new way. Faith in Jesus became the new way to salvation and righteousness with God. The law became the old way. Jesus was the new way to salvation. But the people were so shaped by those old laws and traditions and rules that they could not separate the two. They equated, we've got to have salvation through faith in Jesus, and we've still got to follow the law perfectly to a T. They couldn't separate the two. And then there was this guy named Saul. Saul was a Pharisee, and he was specially trained in the old laws and the old traditions, and he had devoted his life to it. He was so radical about the old laws that he was killing people and torturing people who opposed the law. And then he had an encounter with Jesus that radically changed his life. And he began following Jesus. And what Saul learned is that solely following the law and applying it to salvation wasn't right anymore. It was through faith in Jesus that salvation was granted. And so Saul changed his view of God. He changed his view. He changed the way that he thought, and his name changed to Paul. And we talk about Paul a lot here at Wellspring because he wrote a lot of the New Testament. And so I want to show you what Paul says about our freedom in Jesus. Because what he did is he went and he began to explain and help other people begin to recalibrate their views of God to Jesus. And so here's what he says. He shares a little bit of his personal experience. Paul says, "When I tried to keep the law, it condemned me. It condemned me." Now, Trey talked in week two about the difference between condemn and correct and how we confuse those things. Correction is helping make someone make it right. Condemnation, to condemn, is about guilt and punishment. And so Paul is saying that as hard as he tried to live by the law and follow it perfectly, all he found was condemnation. He found guilt in the law. And so he tried a new approach. Here's what he did. "I died to the law. I stopped trying to meet its requirements so that I might live for God." He said, "I died to the law." That phrase in the original Greek, "stopped trying and died to the law," really means something like divine closure. Paul found divine closure with following the law. Now, that changes things for me, because what Paul is saying is that he made peace with all the old things that he'd always known and lived by. All of those old beliefs, everything that he devoted his life to learning and knowing, he made a divine peace with it, divine closure. That to me tells me Paul didn't just, you know, throw caution to the wind and whatever, like, "I'm not going to do that anymore." He prayed about it. He had clarity through God. And now he's helping us have clarity. And what he's saying is, when he made peace with those old patterns of thinking, what does he do? He lived for God. He found that he was able to really embrace and experience the abundant life that God had for him when he made divine closure with the law. When he stopped trying and stopped striving for perfection, he found freedom. What would happen if you found divine closure with perfection? What would happen if you made divine closure with your past or with trying to earn spiritual badges? Wouldn't you feel relief? Wouldn't you feel like a burden had been lifted from you? See, when we are constantly striving for perfection all the time, trying to achieve, trying to get everything just right, we are so busy trying to fix ourselves, trying to cover up sin, trying to change ourselves, that we are not even living in the grace that God gave us for free. We're just stuck on a spiritual hamster wheel going nowhere. And what the enemy has is a marvelous makeup of person who could be used for God but is not, because they're so stuck trying to fix themselves. Paul says he found divine closure with it. And he keeps going, and he gives us a little bit of a different perspective to this idea. Here's what he says. "I do not treat the grace of God as meaningless, for if keeping the law could make us right with God, then there was no need for Christ to die." He's saying if we could do anything that would make us enough for God, then there was no need for Jesus to come in the first place. Nothing we do is good enough. Nothing we do can make us right with God. Nothing we do. And freedom is a free gift from God. Grace is a free gift. It is not a prize to be won when we have done enough or when we've stacked our faith blocks just right. It's a free gift. You know what we do when someone gives us a gift? We take it and we say, "Thank you," right? If someone gives you a gift card to Starbucks, you probably go to Starbucks on your way home, Have you ever put a Starbucks card or some sort of gift card in your wallet and you forgot about it? And then for 3 months, you were going and buying $8 coffees. And then one day you were like, man, I had that $10 gift card in there for the last 3 months. Could have been using it all along. Could have used that one time. When we do not accept the grace that God has given us, it's like we have put a gift card in our wallet and forgotten about it. And we're just buying $8 coffees because we think we have to. When someone gives us a gift, we take it, we say thank you, and we put that gift to use. But when we do not live in the grace and the freedom that God has given us because we're trying to be perfect, because we're trying to get it all just right, it's like we're saying to God, that grace isn't good enough for me. I got to fix it on my own first, and then I'll receive what you have for me. And it's like we're just rejecting God's gift. We're just forgetting about it. And God wants so much more for us than that. He never asked us or expected us to be perfect or to be good enough. That is why he sent Jesus. If we could do anything to earn righteousness, if we could read our Bible enough, if we could pray enough, if we could serve enough, if we could be kind enough, if we could forgive enough, if we could give enough money, if we could do enough things, then there was no reason for Jesus to come and purchase our freedom in the first place. Nothing we do is enough for God. But it's okay, because we don't have to be perfect to live free. All we have to do is believe in the perfect Son of God. All we have to do is believe in Jesus. Our faith is our freedom. Our faith is our freedom. When we believe in Jesus, we're free. All past sin, all future sin. I just want you to let that sink in, because some of us are just stuck in a cycle of trying to measure up, trying to get credits with God, and it is exhausting. When we live our life trying to earn credit with God and try to make our way up or be good enough than the next person, trying to match what someone else is doing or what we think we're supposed to be doing, it's exhausting, and we're robbing ourselves of the opportunity to just live in grace. Recalibrating our view to Jesus takes practice. It doesn't happen overnight. It takes work, and it takes being a little bit intentional and reminding ourselves of these things all the time. And so we're going to talk in a minute about some habits that we can put in place to help us live in that freedom and to keep recalibrating our view to Jesus. But before we do that, I want to answer a burning question that I know you're probably wondering right now. You're probably thinking, okay, well, if we have all this freedom, we can just do whatever we want. We just be as wild as we want to be and throw caution to the wind. And about half of you are like, awesome, like, rock on. And the others of you are like, wait a minute, that does not sound good. And that this message is probably really for you, okay? And I know I'm one of them. Like, let's not have too much freedom. That might not be good. But I want to tell you what Paul says. He answers this question for us. Can we just do whatever we want? Here's what Paul says. You have been called to live in freedom, my brothers and sisters. Called to live in freedom. But don't use your freedom to satisfy your sinful nature. In other words, don't abuse your freedom to just do whatever selfish things you want to do. Do you know why we don't sin? You know why we shouldn't sin? It's not because it affects God. Sin is not about affecting God. Us living a certain way does not change who God is. It does not change what he thinks about us. It does not affect his love for us. The reason that we don't sin is because it affects us. Sin affects us. It hurts us. It is painful. I know, you probably know that. Sin is painful. It hurts us and it hurts other people. And so the reason that we don't sin is so that we don't walk down a dangerous life and destroy our lives with sin. And Paul says, don't abuse your freedom to destroy your lives with sin. The reason that God gives us freedom and grace is so that we can experience all the benefits of belonging to Him, so that no matter what we do, we still belong to Him. And here's the other reason, so that we can use our freedom to serve one another in love. Use your freedom to serve one another in love. You know, if you have an idea about God that He is making a list and checking it twice, that He's keeping score of what you do, then that's probably how you treat other people. If you think that God is constantly checking on your performance and what you're doing, and if you've measured up, then that's probably what you assign to others. You walk in here like, let me see who's on the front row today. I know what they were doing this weekend. Or you think, does that person deserve my patience? What has my spouse done for me today to earn my affection? We look at other people and we say, well, why should I help them? They haven't done anything to help me. See, when we have not received that grace and we don't live in that grace, then we're not free to give it to other people. But when we have accepted the gift of grace from God, and when we understand that we don't have to be perfect to live free, then we can remove that expectation from other people. And we can say, they don't have to be perfect because I'm not perfect. God has given me grace, and I can give grace to others. Wouldn't that be better? Wouldn't we be a lot less bitter and burdened if we remove the expectation of perfection from the people in our lives? It would be better. I think we'd be a lot happier. Freedom is free. And Paul continues his letter saying, don't keep going back to those old patterns of behavior. Old habits die hard. He knew that, and that's true. And so I want us to talk about some ways that we can live in freedom, some ways that we can maintain our new view of God that we've been learning throughout this whole series. We're going to talk about some steps before we begin to close, because these are some things that we can do, some practical steps to help us live in freedom, and they apply to everything we've learned in this series. And these are some things that I put into place in my life a long time ago when I began recalibrating my view to Jesus, when I began to walk in freedom. And so I want to share these with you because I believe that they can help you find freedom too. And so here's the first one. Talk to God. Just stay in communication with Him. Stay in communication with God. Even when you feel like you've messed up, and maybe especially when you feel like you've messed up, talk to God. I promise He's not going to be mad at you. I promise He's not going to put you in timeout. He just wants to stay in communication with you because He loves you. He wants a relationship with you, and He wants to give you the best life possible. And you don't need any fancy words. It doesn't have to be anything formal. Just talk to Him every day. And you don't have to call for His attention. He's already there waiting for you. Just engage with Him in conversation. And the next thing is walk in His correction. God does not condemn. He gently corrects. And if you hear a voice that sounds like shame on you, I thought you knew better by now. When are you going to get this right? That is not Jesus. That is the voice of condemnation. That is not the voice of Jesus. Because when you talk to Him, He gently corrects. He will say, hey, that's not good for you. Let me show you a better way. And He might give you some steps of correction to take. Like maybe you've hurt somebody and He might say, go apologize to that person. Do it. He might say, hey, these things are hurting you. Remove these temptations from your life. Or He might instruct you to set up some boundaries to protect you from getting hurt or from hurting yourself. He will give you some ways to correct your steps. Walk in it. Obey. Accept His correction. because he really does want what's best for you. And then the last thing is simply live in his freedom. Talk to God. Walk in his correction. And just live in freedom. When someone gives you a gift, you take it and you say thank you. So we can say thank you to God for freedom by living and practicing freedom. That might mean you do something that you think you don't deserve to do. It might mean you go to someone and you ask for forgiveness, even though you don't feel like you deserve it. It might mean that you raise your hands in worship for the first time. It might mean that you join a serving team. You don't feel like you deserve to. You don't feel like you're good enough or you know enough, but take a step to live in freedom. Because you don't have to be good enough. You don't have to be perfect enough. The perfect one already came. His name is Jesus. And he paid for your freedom. Recalibrating our view of God takes time, but it's possible. And it's even better when you're doing it in community with other people. Lean into people. Help each other recalibrate your view of God, because I promise you, he is not disappointed with you, and he wants way more for your life than for you to feel like a disappointment and for you to wrestle with not being enough. He loves you. He wants a relationship with you. He wants to give you an amazing, abundant life. And so I want to encourage you to put some of these steps in place in your life. Old habits die hard, but when we replace them with new habits, it can help. It can help us begin to live in freedom. We're getting ready to sing a song in just a minute about the reckless love of God. It is the perfect way for us to close this series, because it's about how God is chasing us down. His love for us is so wild and crazy that he is chasing us down, pursuing us. He will stop at nothing to have a relationship with you. And that means that we don't have to do anything. We don't have to earn his affection. We don't have to fight for his attention. All we have to do is stand still and surrender to his love. And so as we sing this song in just a minute with the band, I want to encourage you to practice living in freedom as you sing. Lift your hands and just surrender to the incredible, unstoppable love of God. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much for loving us. Thank you that your love is so much bigger than we could ever possibly wrap our minds around in this economy that we live in. Thank you that you just operate differently, you operate better, and that your freedom really is free. God, I thank you that we do not have to be perfect. Thank you that we don't have to be enough for you. You just love us exactly as we are. And you want to bless us with an abundant, incredible life. We don't deserve it, but you love us. And I pray that we would put some practices into place to help us live in your freedom and to experience your incredible love. It is in your son's name that we pray. Amen.